All right, we're back to item number one, review of the maintenance project bids. Mark.
We opened 10 bids. We opened bids on March 11th. We got 10 bids. You can see the prices were very tight, which is really good to see. It's under budget. We're going to award the full contract tonight. Any questions?
So no brief, questions. So succinct.
All right.
Perfect.
You got a tough job.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Just kidding. Right. I know you do.
Matt, we're only going to be on the PowerPoint for just 2 seconds, which is to show them the actual agenda. Which doesn't really matter. I think you can do that. So there's our agenda for this evening, and shouldn't take too long. I'm hoping to get through it here before the council meeting. So we'll head right into the annual report, hoping that all of you received this. Yes,
yep.
Yay. Okay.
It's a happy look.
Yay, good. So I'm not going to read this to you, obviously. You guys are all adults and can do that on yourselves. So I'll just highlight some of the things that you're going to want to know about or have maybe questions on. And we'll go to the third page, if we could. Perfect. Thanks, Matt. So this page here, I just want to touch on a little bit. Obviously, this shows our calls for service along with the crime stats. And as if you can remember, and you might not, but last year we talked to you a little bit about what's called NIBRS, which is the changeover from the FBI reporting standards from part one, part two crimes.
That's just sitting.
to this type of reporting. What I want you to see though is the calls for service. That was quite a big jump for us, unfortunately. Almost a 22% increase in calls for service from 2020 to 2021. And what I'll point out here is the 2020, 2021, 2022, we had 8 homicides. But the good news, it's not good news ever to have homicides, but I will tell you that none of those homicides were random and all of them were solved, which is outstanding work for our investigations units, right? So that's good news. We did see a decline, which is phenomenal, in our property crime, which is great. But as you can see, our violent crime did unfortunately go up a little bit percentage-wise from 2021. Next slide. And I'll pause there if there's any questions regarding. And let me talk about violent crime just a touch, actually. So a question that you may have for me is, what are we going to do about it, right? What are we going to do about violent crime in our community, and how are we going to curb that? One of the things that we've been discussing at a more broader level with our other chiefs that we partner with regarding drug task force. As you know, we're a consortium with the task force. We have decided to change the drug task force name to focus more on actually violent crime. The reason for that is because many of the cities that are in this collaboration have seen a significant increase in violent crime. And we also are just recognizing that we need a broader scope of more officers to help us combat it. And the drug task force is something that we have utilized often, is a group of officers that we utilize often when it comes to not just drug crime, but also with regards to gun crime. And so we are changing that name, and the name, and I'm gonna hopefully not screw it up for you, but it has been changed to the Northwest Violent Crime Enforcement Team. Is what it's been changed to. We don't like the name force for many reasons, so we got rid of that and used team instead. I'll pause there with any questions on that.
Go ahead, John.
So when you say violent crime, you're talking about assault, criminal sexual conduct, disorderly conduct, and then I think family offenses, is that included in that too?
Some family offenses are.
Some, yep. And so, each one is counted on their own. They're not double counted, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then I see, like, for instance, criminal sexual conduct is ballooned, is what
Unfortunately. Yep. I will tell you this too. None of it random, which is good news, right? A lot of our crim sex cases, unfortunately, have to do with family members and children.
And then family offenses, how would you describe that as a separate category?
So some family offenses, and I wish I should have, let me do this.
You can tell me later.
Thank you. Yeah, let me, because I don't want to give you the wrong information. So let me look that up and I'll email all of you.
Okay, great. Sweet.
One of the things to note with the statistics is we tried to figure out how to present these, because as the feds made the change in the reporting mechanism, actually, this is the grid that we have used traditionally, but they have different names and sections now because it's the feds, right? So they switch some stuff around. So things that maybe previously were counted as one thing, maybe now counted as another thing that didn't show up before. So for instance, I'll call your attention to the kidnapping statute or the kidnapping statistic. This, if you read it on surface, would suggest we had four people that were scooped up and kidnapped out of the city. That isn't true. I actually, when that number popped up, I went, show me those four reports. And it is really how the feds classify it. So for instance, if we have maybe a domestic situation where an individual is not allowed to leave the house as a part of the crime, that would be considered by the way the feds counted as a kidnapping charge, even though it's not what we would think of as kidnapping. So we weren't able to make a perfect apples to apples and did our best so that we could give a show of what the trend is.
So this is, what does this do to our workload? I mean, does this decrease it at all, or does it leave violent crime just to specific officers, or was it already just specific officers?
Are you talking about the new drug task force name?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we already had an officer dedicated to the drug task force. We have for years.
Right.
So it hasn't done anything as far as our allocation numbers on the street, because we've already had someone allocated there.
Right. I guess my question goes to, is that going to take some of the workload off of our regular officers?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say what it will do is it will just enhance what the patrol officers are already doing. And what I mean by that is, let's say that we get a call to wherever in our city regarding a violent crime that needs follow-up investigation. We are going to give that to the new team, the violent offense, whatever it's called. And we're going to give that to them so that they can do the follow-up on that. So as far as for our investigators, it could help, but our investigators are most likely going to be also helping with that. So no, in my opinion, it's not going to decrease our efforts as far as what we're doing on the streets, but it's going to hopefully actually get the crime solved at a quicker pace, because we're going to have more officers to help with it, if that makes sense.
It does. I'm just trying to think of the interfaces that, or the communication and the interfaces that are going to change. Also, you know, those things are done in-house, and obviously in the drug ones, they pretty much get removed from us and reside in this task force, right?
Correct.
And this one looks and feels to me to be a little bit different in that there's going to be a co-op in the interaction between the cases.
Is that yes, right? That's a true statement. If you think about, for instance, our Big Louis situation a couple years ago, there's a lot that happens at the moment.
Right.
And so the team becomes a force multiplier immediately, where they're on call all the time. And so they can come in and help us with a lot of the initial interview. You know, you've watched plenty of TV, nothing solved in an hour, but boy, there's a lot of things that need to happen in an hour. So they become an immediate force multiplier. But the other piece that they are able to do really becomes from an intelligent piece of, you know, these things are not, as the chief alluded to, they're not random. They are either probably related to guns or drugs, or they are relational domestic related. In that first category, you know, one shooting begots the next shooting begots the next shooting. That's the pattern that we're seeing right now in the metro. Having some folks that are dedicated to it are going to much quicker get us to navigate through that, to figure out what's the connection and who are the people. So that's where I believe having that dedicated expertise is going to help us, as the chief said, get to resolution quicker.
Yeah, I would think because they have kind of a bigger picture, they might have some efficiencies in that realm as well. Interesting.
And the other piece, to be honest, is that, you know, if we, when we have a homicide here that our investigators are working on, it might be a shock to folks, but everything else continues in the city. So there are other crimes and thefts and stuff that happens. This allows that dedicated group to be focused on that specific pot of crimes so that we can continue to go about the daily work of investigating other things.
Okay. I know it's probably in this report, but can you remind me which communities are involved in this?
Yeah, so it's the city of Brooklyn Park, Robbinsdale, New Hope, Plymouth, the sheriff's office, and us.
Page 11.
Okay. All right, awesome. Nancy, go ahead.
Thank you. I see that at the last topic or the last category, other offenses, has increased rather sharply, I mean, compared to 2017. Just wondered if you could give a couple examples of other offenses. Yeah.
It's what why I'm smiling right now is because I meant to look up other offenses because as Brian alluded to, a lot of this has changed for us with the reporting standards. Mm-hmm. So let me just look that up because I don't want to speak incorrectly and I will send that to all of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Mayor, are you okay with me moving on?
Yep, please.
So one more thing with regard to violent crime before I get off this page. So you may have seen in possibly the news media or Star and Trib regarding the Hennepin County Attorney's Office and the frustration that some of us here in the in Hennepin County chiefs have been frustrated with the Attorney's Office regarding declination of crimes, meaning they're not charging people when we actually send them down to jail. And so one of those things to help with combating violent crime is obviously having conversations with the county attorney's office. Mm-hmm. The good news is that Mr. Freeman has two dedicated folks who are his, what I call his number two and number three in his office and number four really, who are great leaders and great people. And they have been very, vocal about wanting to meet with us chiefs. And so we developed a breakdown, if you will, of the 37 cities in Hennepin County, and they are going to be meeting with us chiefs on a regular basis to talk about why these cases, some of them who where we have seen have been very violent crime and not being charged, and why is that? And so the good news is we are having that communication now, which is good. And also the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, if you have not heard, one of their legislative agenda items is transparency in charging with regards to county attorney's offices. And so we will be discussing that as well at the legislature to make sure that we're all on the same page with regards to the criminal justice system. Right. So next page. You know, I'm not gonna read these verbatim, but what I will tell you is our social media, as you may or may not know, we're very proud of it, and we're proud of it because of several reasons. One is because we have folks in this community, but not just this community, statewide and nationwide, that loves our page because of what's put on there, and that's because of the work of Brian and Lieutenant Underthun and Jen Novak, our evidence tech, and all of our folks who decide, you know, when they want to put things on our social media pages. So we're very grateful for that. We have seen an increase in our numbers of people actually looking at the page and those who share our page. We have found that we have been very successful in using our social media with investigations of crime as well, which is very helpful for us. Next slide, please, Matt. You may not know this because I don't think we've ever put this in our report before, but you know, you hear Brian and I often talk about training of police officers, and you may not know the amount of training that we do on a regular basis. You know that we hold what's called peace officer license through the Minnesota Police Board, and we have to have certain number of credits to obtain our licenses and keep those licenses going. But what you don't probably know is the actual amount of training goes above and beyond what we need in those 3-year period of time for our licensure. We do that because you want well-trained police officers in your police department. Ann and yourselves have been very gracious with the training budget for us, which we're very appreciative of, in order for us to be able to have that and have our officers well trained. So thank you for that. And then I'll just touch on our officer wellness program. As you know, we touched on this at our last quarterly report. Brian's going to talk about it here a little bit later, so I won't talk about it too much. In fact, Matt, why don't we just go on next page. Our records division, which Brian and I always say is the backbone of this police agency, they truly are the ones who really do all the work in the organization. If we didn't have them, we seriously would not be able to do our jobs. I won't read you the statistics and stats, but they do a ton for us. Next page, please. And then our patrol division, as I stated before, the over 31,000 calls for service, almost 1,700 citations issued in 21. Along with 2,900 vehicle contacts, 475 people arrested in 21. Next page. Canine unit, I didn't touch on the front cover, but as you could probably tell, the reason why Rocco actually was on our front cover is because he passed away in 2021. We thought it was imperative to show the importance of our canine program, being that Rocco was our first canine. And obviously the two canines that we have are listed here. The drone unit, I'm gonna have Brian touch on the drone unit, but what I'll say before he speaks is I don't want anybody to think, one of the things I know that people get nervous about obviously is drones. We have used our drones for many, many things, and Brian will touch on it, but it's been such a positive thing for us, not just, well, I'll just have you.
So the drone unit, we started it in 19 and really were able to launch it, not to be cliche, but
Mark would be proud.
20.
Yeah.
And you know, the drone is a great tool for us that we can use in lots of different settings. Obviously, we have used it a number of times in searches for people, outdoor searches for people, so missing persons. Obviously, it allows, we can amass a bunch of officers and firefighters to search us a couple square miles to look for a missing child, or we can put a drone up and we can cover that same space with less support in a shorter order. So we've used it a number of times successfully in that. We do have a pretty regimented plan in place. We have pilots that are certified by the FAA. We have a certain process that we have to get approved to fly because we're in airspace. And of course, the concern that folks tend to have is a privacy concern. We don't fly into residences. We can't fly into residences. We don't observe residences unless we would have some exigent to actually be looking at the residence anyway. So it really is more intended as a tool to be able to be an easy force multiplier to spaces that we're looking for.
Next page. I actually will touch on this during our staffing update regarding community service officers. So next page, please. As you know, we're a consortium with the West Metro SWAT team as well. It's made up of New Hope, Robbinsdale, and Crystal. Four deployments last year, and they train a ton, which this is what you want your SWAT team to do, is train. Even though I always joke that we don't want the hut boys out there because they're always training, right? And I'm always complaining, do these guys ever work? I mean, what's the deal? And they do, I tease. But I say that only in the fact that you want your SWAT teams to train, and you want them to train a lot, and you want them to train well, because you don't want, I don't want to say what happened in Minneapolis to happen, but you don't want that happening. Right. And the thing is, and again, I'm not saying that what happened there was wrong. What I'm saying is you want to make sure that you have a team in place that is doing the right thing all of the time. Correct. And that's all I'll say to that. Next page. I already talked about the Northwest Metro Drug and Violent Crime Task Force. So next page, please. Use of force stats. So this is new for you to see, right? We told you last year that we were going to be reporting this to you. So I am going to break it down for you in a manner that I think would be easy, at least for me, to tell you about. And then I'm going to have Brian chat, and then I'm guessing that you folks may have some questions. So let me start off by saying this first. Again, over 32,000 calls for service. Remember that number, because our use of force incidents were 83 in 2021, okay? 83, 32,000 calls for service. And I would also say that even though it's 32,000 calls for service, that doesn't mean 32,000 people, right? We are not counting the number of people when we go on calls. There could be a lot of folks at one call, right? So of those 32,000 calls for service, we had 83 use of force reports, which is less than 1%. Okay. If that helps you tell you that that is a very, very low number of times when we are actually having to use our hands on people, okay? Mm-hmm. Or use any type of force whatsoever. So I'll start off with that.
Yeah. Can I add a clarification? Yeah. So yeah. As you may recall, I think we mentioned this before, but we did a full revision of our use of force policies. And as a part of that is where we started covering the statistic. We have what I would say lowered the threshold for what we require officers to report of a use of force. And so we consider a use of force anytime that it moves beyond a compliant handcuff. Meaning if I say, turn around, put your hands behind your back, and they do, we put handcuffs on, we don't consider that a use of force. If you say, I'm not going to, or you just sit there and our officers actually grab you physically to move you, we would consider that a use of force. If you compare these numbers to other agencies, I would argue that all other agencies that I'm aware of do not bring the threshold for reporting that low. And so I think it's important to recognize that dynamic, that I would say we are over-reporting what most people would suggest are use of force incidents.
So I'm going to pause there for a second, just because that, does anybody have any questions right now regarding that number?
Chief Hubbard, you answered kind of, I guess, one of the questions, right? I already knew that answer, but I think for like context, right, that I know we're over reporting. And I know it's still probably not necessarily apples to oranges, right, but different types of apples. Are there any regional, state, or like national kind of statistics for a comparison? Like I know you probably don't have them right now, but my experience it would then go to kind of tell, you know, us that it's still, most departments still have a higher use of force reporting, you know, if you, per calls for service. So when you really kind of where I'm getting at, when you look at, I think it's a very good kudos, I guess, if you will, right? When you look at while I don't know the actual numbers, but just based off of experience, when you have the national, just kind of overall where they have a lower standard, and not necessarily that it's bad, right? But a different threshold of reporting use of force, and that their use of force reports are probably still higher per calls of service versus we have a higher standard to report and a very, very low number. So would you agree with that or would you disagree with that?
I anecdotally absolutely would agree with that, Member Banks. I don't believe that we're gonna find a comparable because I don't believe that what we call joint manipulation or muscling, which simply means you refuse to move and we move your arms behind you and handcuff them. I don't know of another agency that would report that as a use of force. When you move, if you will, we don't talk about it in a hierarchy, but when you move to a different level of force, taser use, less lethal, those kind of things, I think we would be able to find comparables. And I think even with that, we would find our comparables are significantly less than what everybody would report. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would agree that it's going to be difficult for us to try to compare for many reasons. One is we're going to have to find an agency of our size with the same population, same calls for service, along with the similar things that we are asking our cops to report on, right? Which, as Brian said, we don't think there is any other agency. Now, we could be very wrong, but we definitely have narrowed this down very specific to make sure that we are reporting on everything purposely to be transparent.
I'll add the additional context from a numerical standpoint, because obviously we've looked at this. Those 83 uses of force, given that lower threshold, what I think would be a comparable to many agencies would be if we do the joint manipulation or the muscling, if we take that off, if we don't count that as a dynamic, and we don't count handcuffing, because presumably if you use force, it will end in handcuffing. If we really talk beyond that, meaning I end up bringing you to the ground or anything else, using a tool, pointing a tool at you, our number is actually 41. We have 41 incidences in 2022 that, wow, that ended up with you on the ground or something that most people would consider more severe than that. So that even suggests of those 83, really half of them were what most would agree is just part of doing the job. You're under arrest and we got to get you under arrest and you're not really going with the program, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. Thank you.
John?
Just a comment. A pie chart is best used for two variables. And so when you have this many variables and you're showing it in a pie chart, it gets kind of muddied. So, I mean, like, as whereas you, the graph that you have down below showing officer injury, suspect injury, graphs like that are much better represented in this case, especially when we're talking about this type of a statistic. So that's just an observation.
No,
that's
thank great you. Feedback. This is great, because this, again, this is our first time, right? So for next year, you will see the bottom one. Okay. Used. Yeah. This is seriously, this is why we're doing this, because we want to make sure that it's easy readable, not just for you, but for our community, right? And this was our, we were trying to figure out how to report this. So thank you for that.
Yeah, go ahead, Brendan.
So under officer injury, I think I just kind of, I would say in the same like context, like you have suspect injury reported, right?
Yep.
67, none, and then minor injury non-visible, minor injury visible. You know, like what, you know, is that officer injury, was that, you know, was it minor, something that kind of break that down,
yep,
right? You
yep
know, was that an injury that resulted in, you know,
yep,
time off? Or I don't know how you necessarily want to do that, but I would just
yep
like show that. Or was it just a scratch and still a reportable yep injury?
So two other stats I just want to share with you in relation to that. So that number 41 I gave you, where that physical contact was greater than the muscling. If you look at the category up here that says level of resistance, it talks about a number of reasons, because the officer has to justify the use of that force. So what was the level of resistance they maintained? You'll see when you look at that chart that it talks about unarmed passive, which means I ask you to get out of the car and you don't. Nonverbal non-compliance, which is simply where I'm mouthing off to you and not doing it. And then unarmed active, which means basically I'm actively resisting you. If you take those three large categories out, and all of the other situations that we have, which for us would be high risk situations, a weapons call, a felony stop, an assault situation, or an armed person, we have 40 uses of force that were because the level of resistance was at that higher threshold. And so the comparable that we make is it's obviously not a perfect comparison, but we have 40 incidences where it was what all of us would agree, a serious incident. And we have 41 incidences where our use of force was elevated. And again, it's not 40 for 41. Obviously there's some outliers in there, but just by comparison to say that this would at least on surface say, we don't believe that our officers are using a higher level of force than the situation might dictate. The two other things that I would note is one, we have that I just think has to be noted. We have zero incidences of a weapons discharge in 2021. We had no firearm discharges where our officers shot somebody. I think we have to note that. That's a win for everybody. And then the second thing that I just want to call attention to, which we shared before, is part of this process that we put in place is each one of those 83 incidences, the officers fill out a specific form. That form goes to a supervisor who reviews the actual report, as well as watching body cam footage, if it's available, of that incident. An uninvolved supervisor looks at that. It then goes to the lieutenant, and the final sign off is mine before we file it. And so again, I think we are at the front of saying, okay, we have three independent supervisors who have reviewed a use of force to say, this is within policy, it was appropriate, it was acceptable for the circumstance, et cetera. And I think we should be proud to be able to say that we use that level of scrutiny each time. So I just think it's important to note that.
Wow, very nice. Okay.
Any other questions regarding use of force? Thank you for all of your comments with that, because we will definitely make those changes. Okay, next slide, Matt. I'm not going to touch on the community engagement. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. I will touch on, however, our neighborhood outreach office, just so everybody knows, has moved. The shopping center ended up leasing out our current space, which was at 227 Willow Bend. It has moved to, and I can't remember the address, 111 Willow Bend, which was near it's the old Catherine space, I believe. So near Dollar Tree,
yeah,
the jewelry place. So we're in the process of moving in there. Once we're up and running, we'll make sure that we let everybody know that information. And as you know, the shopping center leases that space to us for a very, very small amount of money, which is very kind of them. And then our crime prevention board, obviously, you know that they have been around since 2008 and have done an outstanding job for us, and we appreciate their volunteerism. Next slide. Yeah. And then obviously our community events, I won't bug you with that. You can read that on your own. And our department awards on the next page, as you know, they all come before you, and we appreciate the fact that you are willing to listen, not only listen, but obviously support us as well. And I'm going to talk about our new police department building a little bit later, but the very last page, what I wanted to touch on, we meaning Brian and I and the rest of our team, would not be able to do this without Mike Peterson. Mike is the one that actually puts this together. We provide him the information, and he is so kind to put it together. So I got to give him a big shout out, because he did an outstanding job with this report. So I will pause there.
And an extra kudos to that in saying that I asked Mike if we could look at a different format from what we've done the last couple of years. If you look at what we've had recently, this is significantly different in layout. And Mike took the vision that I kind of threw in his lap and created it. So to the thoughts of, if there's feedback on this format, great. But the hope would be that this is a much more friendly, robust, really giving a picture of what great things are happening with our
park. It really does look like a complete rework. It's pretty significant. So yeah, Brendan.
All right. One question I had, kind of going back to the department training aspect. Again, I think I always think when you have something to contrast, or like, you know, it's giving some context, is like, to show, I know how good you guys are doing, right? And I think we as a council and overall know how, but if you don't know, right? So, you know, what is the, I'm going to say, what is the minimum, but what is the required post hours, right? So when, and it's, I think even more so for the community, right? When we're trying to justify what we're doing, when they see, well, this is what's required and this is what we do. It kind of almost in the same line of where it's talking about the stats, right? Mm-hmm. This is what everybody else does or where they're kind of at, and this is where we are. Just kind of helping to highlight that. And then
Councilmember Banks, I will just anecdotally say, we'll get the info, but because the post board changes a little bit, but I believe that the current minimum requirement for licensing is 48 hours for every officer every 2 years, every three years.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so it's a pretty minimal standard. We're at arguably 100 or 360 in that same time frame.
Right. No, I mean, it's kind of one of those. I think for the communication piece. And then are we making this like available like online? Like,
yep, so we'll be posting it tomorrow. I wanted all of you to see it first before we post it anywhere and before we post it on our website. Yep.
But no, I really it wasn't like, oh, this is, you know, I was like, oh, this is really good. I was enjoying reading through it, and then I could see the different layouts. So I appreciate it.
All right.
Okay,
yep.
Next slide, please, Matt or Brian, whoever. staffing updates. So we are in the process right now of hiring two part-time community service officers. We have two conditional, or I should say one conditional offer out there, and then one person who will be starting very soon. I'll tell you that as far as police officers, we are technically fully staffed. As you know, we have 34 licensed police officers. We are expecting some retirements in the near future, so you may see some new faces here soon. Next slide. I'll turn that over to Brian.
Real quick, as the chief alluded to earlier, we are continuing to push our officers towards this concept of wellness, with the idea being that you're only going to serve everybody as well as you are. And we successfully started last year our mental health checkups. So all of our staff, including our civilian support staff, have done at least one session with a mental health provider. We do allow them to do additional sessions if they and the provider feel it's necessary. We don't get that information. We just get the bill for it. But I think that's fantastic. And I did not have to put the screws to any of our staff to do it. A few reminders, but nobody pushed back, which is great. We are implementing with Robbinsdale and New Hope a peer support team, which we've seen as a great model around the country as just kind of an intermediary step of you just need someone who's got some training to come alongside and be able to just process through some stuff. And so they just went through their training here recently, and we will start getting that info out so that officers have another resource. And then we are embarking this year on kind of a physical wellness incentive type program, some competition stuff, some incentive stuff for staff to continue to make that an important deal. This job rocks your body to the core. We want to encourage the staff to really continue to be physically minded so that when you retire at some point, I keep saying, I want you to retire and I want you to retire in your whole. I want your body to be functioning and I want your mind and your spirit and your relationships to be functioning. So just to let you know that continues to be a big emphasis that we want staff to keep themselves healthy.
I will share with you just a quick story about the physical wellness piece, and Brian doesn't know this because he was gone when this happened, but our record staff, so it's all not just police officers but all of our staff. So last week our record staff decided that they were going to do a wall, what they call the wall sit, right? So you lean up against the wall, right? And then you sit there until however long you can. And obviously there's an incentive for us to, if we do that, that we have to film ourselves and make sure, because we don't want liars out there to, you know. So I'm hearing this as I'm in my office because the three record staff are with us, and I come out and I said, you guys aren't keeping yourselves, right? So Rachel, who's one of our gals in records, literally, I mean, I'm not kidding you, she was going to beat one of our officers' times. That was in her head, right? And she ended up doing it. And so none of us taped it, but I made sure that I immediately sent an email to our wellness sergeant and said, I witnessed her do this. Make sure she gets a point, because that was phenomenal. Because I, of course, didn't get that. I was like doing it. I'm like, yeah, I'm done. You go right ahead. I'm like 25 years older than her too, so just make sure you know that.
How long did she hold a wall?
Oh, sit? Long time, like 3 minutes. I want to say 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
Nice.
I think one of our officers did it for 5 minutes. I think.
Wow.
Yeah, but the average has been like a minute and a half to 2 minutes.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So go home tonight and see how you
and it's gotta be 90 degrees there. It can't just be you can't just leave. Like, yeah. Yes, 90 degrees. Okay.
90 degrees.
Yeah. I know. How about I save this, because this is gonna take a little bit longer discussion and we're almost there. Do you want me to save this?
Sure. Okay. That'd be fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you're gonna get going.
Yep. Right. We can continue
okay.
at this point. So we'll continue until after the council. All right. All right, let's continue our Tuesday, March 15th work session. And we're back into the report from the chief.
Thanks.
Hi guys.
Thanks, Mayor and Council. So as we already talked about the use of force collection, as you know, with regards to the use of force collection, we actually are the ones that are able to control that here at our police department. With the race gender collection, we can't do that. So we are at the whim of Hennepin County Dispatch. And this is, I'm not just saying that lightly, they have a big undertaking with regards to this. And
So unfortunately, I don't have those stats for you because we are still continuing to work with them on getting the appropriate information and what it is that we are going to do. As I talked to you about that last time, we, our police department, is actually gathering a lot more information than other cities are with regards to race, and we're doing that purposely because we want to make sure that we have everything transparent for everybody. So we are continuing to work with Hennepin County Sheriff's Office on that, and hopefully at our next quarterly update, we should be able to provide you with some additional information. So any questions on that? Okay, next slide, please. Matt, thank you. So I'm going to turn it, well, actually, I'm going to chat briefly about the Tri-City partnerships. As you know, New Hope, Crystal, Robbinsdale work very closely with one another, not just on calls for service, helping one another out with mutual aid, but we also partner with them on various items, as you know. With regards to the mental health social worker, we share Asha, who is a Hennepin County employee, but is embedded in our three cities and into our police departments. I will tell you that Asha is very, very busy in these three cities. So busy that the city of New Hope's police chief is going to be asking for a full-time mental health social worker. And yours truly is also going to be asking for that as well for the next budget season. And the reason is because we have realized, at least in both of our cities, that we can't sustain the fact that we're sharing it a third of the time. And we just have, unfortunately, too many mental health calls for service. So just know that that is coming. Joint Community Police Partnership update. As you haven't met NECA yet, but I am going to get her before you soon so that you can meet her. She is fabulous. We really won on this one. I think we mentioned at the last quarterly update is that she interviewed with the Bloomington Police Department and with our police department because we were both hiring a JCPP liaison at that time, and she chose our agency, and we are very grateful for that. So I will make sure that I get her before you soon. Also, with regards to her position, the cities of Robbinsdale and New Hope are looking to become an addition to the JCPP program because they've seen how successful it is for us here. So hopefully within the next 3 to 6 months, they will be hiring someone as well and sharing that person. Also, the person who actually supervises NECA, she actually received a promotion within Hennepin County, and so they just hired a new replacement for NECA's position, or for NECA's supervisor, excuse me, and they will be starting here shortly as well. Any questions regarding JCPP? And you know that our Multicultural Advisory Committee falls under our JCPP. They are Crystal residents or business leaders, and we meet monthly with them. And we have a phenomenal, I think we are up to eight folks on our MAC, hoping to have a few more join. We also most likely, now that New Hope and Robbinsdale will be joining JCPP, we are looking at combining MACs so that we have probably anywhere from 15 to 18 members with our MAC.
Does, at this point, does either Robbinsdale or New Hope have a MAC?
No, they do not.
Oh, okay.
Good question.
So currently, what is the MAC, the numbers in MAC? You said 18
eight.
It will be?
We have eight people right now for Crystal. We're looking, if we partner with New Hope and Robbinsdale, it'll probably jump to 15 to 18 people.
Okay. Is that restricted then, the number of people?
Yeah, you know, yes. And there's a reason for that, right? I mean, if it can't get too big, because then we just will not be able to have that one-on-one conversation with folks. However, we are going to take as many people as we can. I'll just be honest with you, just because a lot of folks, this is a volunteer position that we want people to really, really be focused, because we want the information to our police department of what it is that we need to do differently, what it is that the information that we want to get out to the community. So we need these folks to be really, really focused. And so you don't want it too big.
All right.
And then our SWAT team is made up of also New Hope, Crystal Robbinsdale. Are you seeing a theme at all by chance? The whole Crystal Robbinsdale. Oh, Nancy just did this. She said merge. Oh, okay. Anyway, I just want you to know that.
I saw the running on the wall.
Oh, did you?
Way before that.
Yeah. I can go down to deputy chief and work for Patrick or for Tim over there. It doesn't matter. I mean, Ryan. Anyway,
why did they have to look
at you? There you go, Therese.
I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter who's chief. They'll all be working for her.
True.
Smart answer.
Yeah, that was a smart answer. Uh-huh. Correct one. So our SWAT. Sorry, was that was out loud, actually.
That was out loud.
So anyway, our SWAT team. You heard me talk about a little bit with our annual report. You know, I joke a lot about our SWAT team, but I just have to tell you, I am very proud of this team. They are a phenomenal group of officers who do a great job for us. And they train a lot, but that's a good thing. We did have a change in the commander role, which I think I mentioned to you at the last quarterly meeting, but I just want to make sure. So because we are a consortium, we kind of switch off commanders here and there depending on people's promotions and positions. So right now the commander of the West Metro SWAT team is Sergeant Pete Stanley, who's with New Hope PD. And then Lieutenant Pete Underthun with our organization is the assistant commander. So those two, the Pete, we call them the two Petes or Pete doubled or whatever. Pete squared. They do a great job at leading the SWAT team. And then our community engagement forum for this year is going to be Wednesday. We're trying it out during the week, Wednesday, October 12th of this year at our community center from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. And more to follow on that, but it will be these three cities.
Nice.
I'm going to turn it over to Brian.
So a number of things happening in community engagement, obviously, that I'll just update you real briefly. The Antoine Martin was named as our juvenile officer late last year, and he has hit the ground running. Because we haven't had someone in that position for a while, he's got some makeup ground to work. So he really has been working to reestablish our connections with the schools. And other youth organizations. We actually are planning over the next couple months to get all of our staff into each of our school buildings to make sure that everybody is acclimated to those facilities, knows how they're laid out, what they are. In addition to Antoine, we'll be working with those schools to update their emergency action plans. And so making sure that we are sitting at the table helping that. And he's been at a number of schools doing some tutoring and hanging out in lunchrooms and playground stuff and all things that we need to be doing. And I keep saying to all of our community engagement staff, your job is not to be the face, your job is to be the connection. And so if all the school kids in Crystal only know Officer Martin, then he's failed. His job is to make connections and be there, but to figure out ways to get the rest of our staff interacting, and he's doing a fantastic job. The Cornerstone Advocate, we share our Cornerstone Advocate from, we share that individual, Amanda, with Maple Grove. There's a theme here to our embedded staff. One embedded staff in multiple places simply just to do the job right doesn't seem to work great. So Amanda is juggling some major caseloads. By way of reference, Amanda follows up with every victim of domestic violence or assault, but it's farther than that. In that, if officers have contact with someone, there really is no violent issue that's occurred, but maybe it's pretty heated. Amanda will follow up with those families, with the goal being to prevent maybe a situation moving that way, and to provide resource, et cetera. She's been a fantastic addition to the team, advocate. We keep saying that with our embedded staff, although they're all overworked, we are really clicking on all cylinders right now. We really have a top shelf group of folks in all of those roles, which is fantastic.
So I'll just touch on, as Brian is trying to allude to it. So we pay $39,040 for Cornerstone to be embedded with us. We have paid that for the last 15 years, mm-hmm. which means that number has not risen for over 15 years, which is good for us, right? I mean, that's a good thing, right? However, Cornerstone's point and the conversation that I will be having with their executive director and the other chiefs who are with Cornerstone, they simply can't do that anymore. And there are several cities that Cornerstone has that are embedded domestic advocates that pay less than we do, where it's a little odd because they shouldn't be paying less than we do. And then there's other cities that pay more than we do. And there's really not a, it's not fluid throughout the board with the 10 cities that are with Cornerstone. Mm-hmm. And so the executive director is saying that those of us who want to continue with these folks who are embedded, they're going to talk to us about what that cost truly is to Cornerstone, right? And so I'll be coming back to you with that as well to tell you what that dollar amount is. I'm hoping it's not that much more than the $39,000, and but it is going to increase. We've been, like I said, very fortunate that over the last 15 years that hasn't gone up. But obviously it's probably time that it does for several reasons. And the fact that Brian alluded to, we simply just can't share her any longer with Maple Grove. We need her to be full-time in here because of our caseload with domestic assaults.
The chief alluded to JCPP. I will echo the sentiments on NECA. She's been with us for about 3 months, and it has been amazing the inroads in a short period of time that she's made with groups that we haven't interacted with or haven't for a while. She's been fantastic. So weekly is coming with, hey, we connected with this or we did that, which is fantastic. One of the things that I have chatted with her about is we do our big community forum, which we've done for a number of years. However, we have in the past done some smaller forums with local communities, different church groups, et cetera, which has been very impactful. And so I asked NECA to start looking at, let's get back into that a little bit, where we're not bringing everybody to our space, we're going to your space and letting you have a chance to give us feedback and interact in a space that may seem safer to you than coming to a city building. So look forward to continuing to have her there. Events, you know, one of the goals in this redo of the annual report is to say, you know, we can throw these things out here that, hey, we're doing this and we can put something on Facebook or whatever. But I think when you look at it in print, if this is the way that this small team of folks is really trying to integrate itself into the daily fabric of this community, I think that the hope is that this does justice to that. We continue to be excited in those partnerships and the events that we're able to do. Social media, the chief alluded to that. It has been a fantastic tool. We get called from time to time from individuals, other agencies who are like, how did you get that kind of a following? And we don't know, but we'll keep it. And I think the other thing I'll mention that goes with social media that we alluded to in here is our city and the chief have a longstanding history of partnership with our local media. And I think we are seen in well regard. The chief and I routinely get phone calls from media outlets because everybody else shuns them. And we see them as a partner who has a job to do and a story to tell. And we try to really actively engage them. And I think that bears well with how we are portrayed in the broader media, maybe more than you'd see. So, and then the chief talked about the neighborhood outreach move. It is not open yet. It was an entirely pink facility when we moved in about a week and a half ago. So our public works team is Johnny on the spotted to get it back to a cool beige, I think is the color that was chosen, and we'll get that situated and get it open here shortly. So
any questions on that? Any engagements on
that? Seeing none.
Okay, next slide. Okay. Oh, this is exciting. You see the smile on my face every time we just see the picture of the new PD. So here's what I can tell you, and what we've been told is that we are on time. August 13th or so is when they're thinking about finishing the actual construction of everything. which means we then can move the furniture in, move the IT stuff in, which would take about 4 to 5 to 6 weeks or so. So we physically, the police staff will not physically be in that building until closer to the end of September, most likely. The furniture, Kim and I had a blast with the furniture team. In case you didn't know, when I went to Brian and said, okay, you know, do you or others want to be part of the furniture selection? And he looked at me like I had five eyes and said, no way in heck am I going to be part of that. And nor did anybody else in the department. So you should just know that yours truly and Kim picked out everything, and I know you're going to love it. So you will love it. I promise, Nancy. It's
a cannot wait.
Nice, nice color scheme, very neutral.
What she didn't say was that I said that I didn't want to be a part of it, but I reserved the right to criticize all of it.
He did. That is true. And of course, I said, of course, that is true. So Matt, don't do the slide yet because I want to talk about it first. But so you already saw it in your packet, right? If you remember, we talked about what was going to go on the 42nd side of the building, right? We didn't want it to say police department or Crystal Police Department. Yeah. So Ann, Kim, and I were trying to figure out, okay, what is it that we want to say? A couple of you told us. And then we realized that we had a sign that already said, next slide, Matt, Crystal Municipal Center, right? So when we went to Wold and told them, this is what we think we want, make it look pretty on the building, this is what they came up with. And it looks nice, in my opinion, hoping that you like it. Yes?
I think it's fine.
Okay, I've got a fine. Trees.
Go ahead. That's high regard, though, you know, right. Wait for me.
Right.
Yeah. I think it looks great. Is that what we're going to call it, Municipal Center?
So that's what the current sign says. The current sign that is on the corner of 42nd and Douglas says, with our logo, City of Crystal Municipal Center, and then it says Police, Fire, City Hall.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. Go ahead, Brendan.
Yeah, I mean, not it's real simple, basic. Mm-hmm. But like, there's, you see where that second arrow is right there? It's like a big space right there.
So move Municipal Center up.
No, like
right. Oh, so you're thinking of putting something there, putting the logo there?
Yep.
I'm sure they can do that.
Could, I don't know. I don't know how much that would add to the cost of everything. It's only money, right? It's only money, right? But it, I mean. I just think about, you know, the branding. We already, I mean, we had a small, it's a real tiny sign, mm-hmm. right there on the corner, right? That yep. most people yep. can't even really read what it is there, right? This will be really big and prominent. And I just think, like, if we could put the logo, you know, right there.
That would be the star. If we're going to have the text there on off to the left, you'd put just the star.
Star.
You wouldn't have the one with the.
No. It would be just the star.
Okay.
Right there over off to the side. I mean, Nancy's the graphic designer person. That's, but I just was thinking again. Yeah, this is an opportunity for, you know, the logo to go there, and I mean, it'll probably be lit up and look really nice at night.
So, a couple things hit me. Uh-oh. Some of which I'm not going to say. You know, I love the logo. I love the idea of using the logo. I would hope that maybe in the lettering we could try to see what it looks like using some of our typeface.
Yeah, so you mean not, the current typeface is
yeah, on. See, yep. See how it looks that way? Yeah. Okay, yep. Maybe I will say it, you know, with the round logo, maybe we should re-roof this so when people fly over, they can see the logo.
That's going to
be money.
It's only money.
Only money.
I know, I do say it's only money. But.
Okay, of course I'm joking.
Okay, I will bring that back to Wold, and then we'll get it to you ASAP because we're getting dangerously close to the time of needing right. to order.
And that would be on the
42nd facing that faces the library. The
so when you're coming,
yep, when you're east, coming
side, you're going east on 42nd.
You're gonna see. Oh, yep,
that's where you'll see.
Yep.
Okay. Just curious.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Would the lettering be lit? Or is there a light shining on the lettering?
I will ask them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
John, go ahead.
Is the deputy chief on the signage committee?
No, he's not. He did not want to be on that either.
Are there opportunities for signage on the other side or not?
So I was going to say.
On the other side.
As you're coming
in. You're going west or south?
Nope, because that is our fence. That's our
parking
lot. So that's the open parking lot, which will have our black wrought iron fence around it.
All right, let's go out there and take a look. It's a pretty high building. I think it's pretty visible. Is there an opportunity in the upper part of that building?
On this side.
I see.
On my side.
So they have the same thing?
Sure. Depends on the, I don't remember what it looks like, so I can't really say the same thing.
Windows open there?
I don't remember.
Yeah, there's ribbon windows.
But let's take a look.
I will ask.
See what it looks like?
Yeah, I'll ask Gold what they say about that, absolutely. Okay.
Because that's really the busiest, the intersection where you're going to get more views in that area.
Yep.
And if not there, maybe where? Maybe it's over here more. Maybe it's on this face of the new part of the city hall.
Yep.
I don't want to screw up our sign budget, but.
No, I mean, obviously it's going to cost more money if we put more stuff.
So. Well, right, but it's,
yep.
Yep. Where's the best place?
I mean,
I know
it's I'm making myself laugh, right? Yeah, we could put like a big LED sign on the corner. Maybe get the EA involved, right? Yeah, we have this full signage rolling deal.
No.
I got elected, but no.
right, John? Right, you know what I'm talking about? We can have like we can have just a banner that, you know, that kind of. All the advertisements and stuff.
Board?
We could broadcast our council meetings.
We could broadcast the council meetings out there. Absolutely.
So
I was.
I'm going with him.
I was
cut to the chase here. Jumbotron.
Yes. Thank you, Mark.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
We've lost control.
You're spending your money from the earlier.
All right.
Okay, so I will go back to Wold, Mayor, and come back to you most likely at the next council meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, very good.
Now, with regards to the statue, just so you know, I apologize once again because I don't have anything for you, but there is a reason for that. The artist, his two main sculptures got in a horrible snowmobile accident and been hospitalized. And then his third sculpture had COVID for quite a number of weeks. And so they have been a little bit behind. He has promised that that our statue will be completed by the time the building opens. But he did send me a rendering of one. I was hoping he was going to send me a rendering of the whole thing, but he has not done that. And so as soon as he does send me a rendering of the whole thing, I will make sure that you see that.
Cool.
Sweet.
Any questions on that?
Nope.
Okay. I'm done.
You're done.
Can I say one more thing, actually? Just one quick thing.
Sure.
And you already know this, but I said a big kudos to Mike Peterson regarding this, but another huge thanks to Brian. If, you know, you may not know this, but I wouldn't be where I am today without Brian Hubbard. And so you need to understand that he is very, very vital to the success of this organization, but also the success of me. And so I just really, truly appreciate the work that he does on a regular basis. So I just want to make sure. You already know all that though, but yeah.
Anyway. On that note, is it possible to recognize him at a council meeting or is that?
I don't really want to do that. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I will definitely do that.
Brian, do you have anything to say?
He was running the ship well long before I showed up. I will say this though, and I will comment on what the chief had alluded to earlier with regards to thanks. In a nutshell, we had a department-wide meeting about a month and a half ago. And after some court verdicts came out, just to gauge the pulse of where staff were and figure out what they need and where they're at. We had a very good discussion. It really was a listening session for us to hear them and to give feedback or to kind of share with them our thoughts. But what I will say is, in the uncertainty of law enforcement right now, in the uncertainty that our officers are feeling of doing their job and trying to do it right, and you know, I'm not making a political statement. I'm just saying it's a hard time to be a cop right now, and not knowing where your focus should be. One of the resounding discussions in that meeting and a couple of other individual meetings we had with groups of staff was, even though there's uncertainty in our communities, there's uncertainty in our, in the criminal justice world, there's uncertainty in the activist worlds and the community worlds, there is no uncertainty about whether or not we feel as a staff supported by the administration of the police department, of the administration of the city, or of our elected officials. And I don't think that is not something that many, if not most, of our counterparts can say. So I will just, that to me is really a huge statement that it's important for you all to hear, that you know, we are only successful as you all allow us to be. And I want you to know that the sentiment from the bottom rung of our staff all the way up is great appreciation for the support that you show to our department.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your presentation.
Absolutely. Excellent.
Next is our continued discussion on the Inclusion Commission, or whatever name that ends up being. Mm-hmm. I don't know how we move forward. Let's see, we have Troy sent out a mock copy for us to kind of review. I don't know if there was any type of—
I think it was based on, as you'll recall, at the February 10th meeting, most of you were there, and you spent a lot of time looking at the Golden Valley model. And so based on that, Troy and I tried to come up with an ordinance and bylaws for you to consider. And so I think tonight the council should talk about what those look like. I know there have been a couple of conversations. I had one request that we do a search and destroy, and instead of— that's wrong, search and replace. Equity and inclusion put in multicultural advisory. So that's one alternative that has been offered up, and in the naming of the body, whatever it is. And then with the mayor's permission, I'm going to pass out— sure— some verbiage he has suggested as well. I'll pass that along. But I think it's really to hear what works in this, what doesn't work. Does this not reflect what I think you talked about on February 10th? So is there anything else?
Mr. Mayor, yeah, I agree. So this is very much, you know, I guess in pencil. Some of this in the ordinance and in the bylaws reflect what's already in your code as far as procedure, open meeting law, you know, those sorts of things. So, you know, that is what it is what it is. But when it gets to purpose and scope and name and, you know, whatever else, that's all pencil. So you give direction, I'll be happy to make changes as directed.
Okay. I'll talk on what was passed out real quick. I think really the only change, I mean, the name, it's just a name I came up with that was different. It wasn't multicultural, like the CMAC, but I mean, that's perfectly acceptable to me as far as I'm concerned, which would be the Council Multicultural Advisory Commission. I think that has a cool ring to it, but I think welcoming community kind of ties two of our priorities together. I'm not sold on that. It's just, I put something different up there. That's all I have to say about that, I think. In terms of what changes I made, it was just in the mission area, making it a little bit more specific and inclusive, I think.
Okay.
I have a question, but it's not related to the bylaws.
Can I? That's fine.
In the ordinance, you have 2.14, which is the sunset extension. Do we have that for all of our commissions?
No.
Mr. Mayor, no.
We do not. We talked about whether you do an annual review or a periodic review of the work of the commission versus a sunset, unless there's an affirmative action carrying it forward. That was where that came from. Sort of based on the council's conversation and some of the concern about what do you do if the commission isn't doing what you want or goes off the rails, I guess. I'm using my words. Again, seek and destroy, remember? I think that was where that came from.
I guess that could happen with any commission.
Correct. Absolutely.
But it would probably be useful if, you know, if this commission has the same requirements that all the other commissions have, as opposed to like saying like, okay, we're done with you now. You know, it's over. Move on. I mean, I think that if that's the case, generally, in my experience with, like, and I think you even talked about other commissions. I mean, there's an ebb and flow of membership, and you know, the outlook and purpose of each commission changes as a result. Probably the only commission that's probably been, well, two commissions that have been, you know, pretty, you know, stable over the years that I've been with the city, you know, Park and Rec and Planning Commission, right? Because you have a committed, you know, membership, right? Commissioners that do a really good job, right?
Well, and I think their mission, if I can interrupt you, is a little clearer than some of the other commissions have been. The Environmental Quality Commission or the Human Rights Commission that used to exist. I think the Planning and Parks and Rec have a much more clear responsibility.
And granted, I also think, the EQC, I think, is finally now starting to get to a point where they're actually, like, you know, they actually seem to have taken direction and great conversation, which is like, you know, which I think bodes well for all commissions, right? And that's what you have to have. And I think this commission itself, if you can feel like you can feel somewhat comfortable in the environment to be able to have that kind of discussion, it's going to flourish and it's going to work well within the city. It's going to help us grow. So anyways, I guess I would remove that from the ordinance.
Remove what, John?
2.14, the sunset extension.
I agree with you.
There, I have a question relating to the task force we had. We had a sunset on that, didn't we?
Well, task forces by their very nature are intended to be for a specific purpose or a specific task. Yes, correct. You are.
But did it have a sunset? It really did.
I believe we one of the task forces, the council did extend the expiration, and I believe the other one sunsetted when the review of the city code was completed.
Mm-hmm. It's not a brand new concept. But I understand your point.
I'd like Therese. To see language included that allows for committees within the commission. So a committee, for example, could work on a specific project. If it's planning something, a citywide celebration for Black History Month or Indigenous People Day or something, just to allow them the flexibility that people that have a certain set of expertise or something can come in and plan an event or plan, you know, a specific activity. So I'd like something written. I don't know, maybe that's a question for Troy, but do we need the language in there that would allow for a committee within the commission? We do need the language.
Mr. Mayor, I would recommend that if that's something that you envision, because I would, it's not in the code that I'm aware of. And so if you want to grant that as being part of their authority, I would say you would want to do that in the ordinance.
Okay, thank you.
Just a point of clarification, is there anything prohibiting them from doing so?
Mr. Mayor and Council, not that I'm aware of, but I would suspect no one has ever done it would be my guess, just because it's, you know, usually it, that's a body unto itself. But I would say language, you know, if this is something the council wants, it's, you know, the commission may create committees to take, carry out specific tasks and report back to the commission. And so it wouldn't, it would be a limited purpose, you know, as was said, you know, you're going to work on this item and bring it back to the commission, which then of course has to bring it back to you all because it's advisory.
I think I'm inclined to kind of leave it similar to the rest of the commissions. And if they have that strong desire to do that, I mean, there's really nothing prohibiting.
Well, true, but what if there is a group that, for example, wants to plan something for Indigenous People Day, but are not members of the commission? I'm just using that as an example. So is there anything prohibiting them from working on a specific project within the scope of the Human Rights Commission?
I don't think there's anybody prohibiting them from coming to the commission meetings or actually coming to the council or, you know, all those things. I mean, they're public meetings and they should actually be, I don't know, maybe that's not the right way to say it. You know, we're trying to make it so that they have accessibility. I think that's there. I think that's there by design.
So, Mr. Mayor, I would see nothing that would stop a commission like this from asking for volunteers from various communities to, hey, you know, we want to put this on. Would you volunteer your time to assist us in putting this together?
Yeah.
You're the subject matter experts. Please help us so that we can put forth a good proposal to the council. Yeah, I don't see. There's nothing that we need to say here to enable that.
Thank you.
I guess two things. One, I say each in your proposal, you're changing the date from the fourth Tuesday to the second Tuesday.
Yeah. That date is very penciled in as well. What I really don't want to have is a commission meeting in the fourth week for the purposes for what we, if we have a liaison. Do we currently have any in the fourth week?
Well,
I don't think we do.
Historical Society needs to support.
But if there is some business or something to bring towards, that was something that I had made note of. Like if there was something to bring to council that needed to probably come in that month or something in a work session. Well,
that's kind of true with any commission.
Right.
But the point being is the fourth week is usually the week off. Many people plan their vacations. Many staff people plan their vacations on that fourth week. And why call that? That's all I'm looking for. It's a different day.
the other thing, and I guess the ordinance piece, not anything I guess necessarily to change it, but I think it just highlighted another point of something we were talking about, the youth, 2.05, right? Must be at least 15 years of age, right? It's kind of, it's almost one of those, right? Like, I don't necessarily, again, it's one of those, I wrote in my notes.
Driver's license?
No, to target, yeah. Right? No, just specifically target youth, right? The fact that, you know, I don't know if FAIR would have it, you know, but I mean, so again, you have Armstrong and Cooper, both have lots of students who live in our city and are, you know, they have student councils, they have all sorts of groups, right? How do we reach out to them, right? To get some involvement, right? I think that would be a huge success, especially even for this commission or really any commission, right? I mean, do we have that age thing or is that like a standard? Is that boilerplate, right?
Mr. Mayor, it's in the code and council member.
So again, kind of just another one of those things that came out. We're talking about involvement and right, really trying to get the youth planting that seed, right, and exposing them to how local government works and all of these different things. When we build those relationships with, especially the, you know, the age with the age, the high schools where, you know, they. You know, I don't know. I don't necessarily know how they, whether it's advertising it, putting it out there, you know, to their student body, and say, hey, there's, you know, there's a commission. Well, there's, I'm quite sure they have kids that are, you know, excited about the EQC or the, right. All of those different things. That's just another way for them to get involved. I just, when I was reading everything line by line, and it just stood out, right? But.
So again, we don't have an age limit for the other commissions, correct?
Mr. Mayor and Council, you do in the
code. We do. 15. Okay.
So, I mean, keeping in mind that this is an ordinance, and so we could certainly add something to the bottom of it to delete that and even add a section saying the council may provide for the appointment of younger people, whatever the word would be, on commissions.
I'm not necessarily saying, like, younger. My oldest is getting ready to go to ninth grade, so he'll be at 14, right? So, I mean, 15, I mean, you have sophomore theoretically, right? 15, 16, 17, right? So I think that's appropriate. I'm more or less saying this is another, it's like, aha, look, we're talking about how do we get more people, you know, how do we get the youth involved? How do we get the community more involved into what we're doing, you know, in the local government, the commissions, things like that. It's just a, you know, they probably don't even know that they can do it. I can guarantee you, I would bet money if I was a gambling man that the schools, that whoever the SGA advisor or the guidance counselors or whatever at the schools have no clue that they probably have students who are interested in something local government and have no idea that they can serve on a commission. So I was not necessarily talking about this point specific, more about, look, here's yet another opportunity.
As you would call low hanging fruit. There's an opportunity to kind of.
Correct.
To do that. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. You know, just overall.
But.
Yeah. Cool. That'd be really interesting. With the number of students and the number of schools, if we had like one from each place.
I mean, you got two high schools. I mean, you had somebody from Cooper, somebody from Armstrong. I mean.
And depending on how many people are in that commission, it may be something that's okay. Maybe we don't want a whole bunch.
No, I just, the exposure, right? And we interview everybody. I'm just trying to say, all right, like, it's like, I think as I kind of start looking in the other things, right? How do we continue to raise up the youth, right? And to be civic minded and involved in, you know, what's going on.
John.
Okay, so to Troy's point, so we would add something to this, talking about like, although the age limit is 15 or whatever, but we're willing to allow, you know, students to apply for the commission to participate in this process. I mean,
I'm not saying we need to add anything. I'm saying it's fine. I'm saying is that highlighted a point of, right, that it's already available, right? And that's why I was asking Troy, all of our other commissions, that's already in there because it's boilerplate, right?
So 15 is fine.
Yeah, I'm perfectly fine with that. That's what I was saying.
I misunderstood you.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm sorry. I think that where that age, what's in there is fine. Like you guys all have met my 14-year-old. He's a little bit different than probably other 14-year-olds, right? The fact that he wanted to come to a work session and was really interested in the blue line and maps and stuff like that, right? Like, that's not a normal 14-year-old, right? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think that's normal 14-year-old, but I wouldn't want him serving on a commission yet, you know, but once he got into high school and, you know, he's looking at other things. And here's another thing too. And you know, universities are starting to look more at not so much what the SAT and ACT scores are, but what are the letter of recommendations? What is their community involvement? You know, and when you have, you know, if you have a kid who's wanting to show that they're more competitive, you know, or, you know, they're wherever they're wanting to go, right? And they've served on a commission and they get a letter of recommendation from their city council. You know, I think that just again, goes to highlight as we continue to find ways to, to promote our youth.
Or even just on the resume type thing. Yeah.
Right. No, yeah. I think it really, and again, to be clear, my whole point really was, hey, here's another opportunity. I think necessarily that just got overlooked inadvertently that we can find ways to get youth of Crystal involved. And not just this commission, but all of the commissions.
When I was reading the bylaws, I was suggested to Ann and Troy to rewrite it using a little bit different verbiage to call it Multicultural Advisory Commission, similar to what the police department, the police department has the MAC, which is really successful. And so as I've been thinking of some of the heartburn that I've had with this issue, why that is, and from my assumptions is that this conversation, and this is backed up by our memo here, this conversation stems from the process that we had this summer. So we had these workshops, we had the community leadership listening and visioning sessions, and we have a report here, what was unearthed during those workshops. And so here we are, based on that experience, we're having this conversation about establishing a commission based on those ideas. So, and I still continue to have heartburn with a lot of the ideas that were presented during those workshops, specifically the listening and visioning session. I still have a lot of concern about those ideas in the fact that the diversity, equity, and inclusion framework allows for those ideas to really thrive or at least exist. The diversity, equity, inclusion framework seems to allow them to exist. So some of the things that were in the report was specifically excluding certain voices based on their privilege, based on their level of privilege, excluding some, so the things that were not in the report that were heard around the table were excluding certain immigrants who were, Black African immigrants who were born in Africa, in African countries that did not fit the, so the answer to me has been to alleviate my concerns have been that this commission will serve at the pleasure of the council. So none of that will be taking place in that commission. My concern is that the framework itself, the diversity, equity, and inclusion framework, allows for these ideas to exist. And they will be there. And tolerating these ideas seems very problematic to me, especially as an elected official who's elected to represent everyone in my section, despite their perceived privilege. So I do see a commission that has these ideas in existence at all as problematic, being as a city council sanctioned commission. So I still have a concern with that. That has not been alleviated for me. That's why I really wanted to approach it differently. If we're going to have a commission, can we have one that just allows for all cultures to be included without ratings or rankings? I mean, if you want to get an idea of the ratings and the rankings that are used, you just Google, I think it's called Privilege Walk or something, where people like rank their privileges and people's traumas are ranked. I mean, it gets really, it's actually not extreme. It's actually quite a common practice. So I wanted something that would include all our multicultural city, would really represent that without any judgment. So I asked Anne to possibly come up with another alternative version of this bylaws using the word multicultural instead of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and really just kind of rework it. So I hope we can have an alternative to what's presented here, just to, even if it's not going to pass, whatever, but even if it's just food for thought and for a more diverse conversation on this issue. So, and that's where I am right now with that.
Yeah, and I share
I share a lot of the same concerns. You know, I guess the way I would voice it, it would be probably a little bit more blunt, but quite honestly, it's I'm not opposed to moving forward in a way that's going to help treat everybody equally and help get rid of discriminatory behaviors in every area of our city. That's kind of the gist of why I was spending time on the mission statement. I didn't spend much time on the rest of the ordinance or anything like that. So in that light, I would support some of the verbiage change throughout the rest of it as well. And I think that what I tried to do in the mission statement was to be a little bit more, I wanted to include more types of discrimination, you know, beyond kind of like civil rights, you know, to take it the next step and make sure that people aren't being treated unfairly or being shut down in the public square. And that's kind of where the verbiage, that's why I included some of what I included. So I hope that will be considered.
And really quick, mine, I just emailed Ann. I know you guys, you were on vacation and you didn't have enough time to whip up a brand new, you know, bylaws overnight. So, or over the weekend. So just whenever you took to, I know it takes time, but just to, for the sake of diverse conversation, in a different perspective, how to solve this issue, the issue of discrimination and racism, without using discriminatory and may I say racist methods or ones that allow for the existence of that. So,
yeah. And that came out very clear in the conversations and in the discussions. And I was surprised. I was really surprised when we're having a conversation about inclusion that exclusion was so prevalent. And it was, I don't know, just kind of, it's kind of what led me to kind of push back a little bit on this. It's like, that's not quite, doesn't fit my view of what we're trying to accomplish here. We want to get rid of all of it.
I sit here reading so something to think about and consider when we're talking about equality, right? Not in the term in the sense of right where we're taking and redistributing, right? We're talking about that everybody has equal access or equal right or availability to something, right? And I don't know, maybe if I just started to read it wrong. At first I read it and I was like, okay, not a big deal. I've read it like five times. Maybe it's also because I'm tired and I didn't have much sleep. So what I don't want to happen, right, is that you have a group who has, I'll be extreme. Because I don't know of an example right here intentionally to say like a specific group, right? So say, for example, you had the Ku Klux Klan here in Crystal. And I would agree, and I think everybody would agree, right, that this is an adverse group, right? That we would put them over here in a discriminatory thing, right? And that they would then raise this group would then raise the flag and say, well, you know, that they are being discriminated against, right? Solely, Doc Elder Brown? as a mechanism or a tool of their continuing to push their own agenda of keeping status quo, right? That something's being taken away from them. Now, mind you, and I've used the same argument, right? Yes, I unfortunately, whether there's, you know, they have freedom of speech, right? And all of these other different things. And I've had to be in situations where, you know, I've had to protect people that I don't necessarily, I'm not agreeing with what they're protesting about or what their, you know, what their stance is. And so that just popped into my head, right? And that while we're doing this, and I don't necessarily know if it's in how we worded, because I actually kind of had enjoyed this simplistic thing that we had at first and of the mission statement. I think when I read, right, that participation or membership in any clubs, association, or unions, et cetera, I think that's, I don't know. Does it make sense what I'm saying? Like, when I'm thinking of the most extreme case, not the general, right? Where I think where most people are going to operate in, but what's going to happen is there will be that. I don't want the good, hard work that we're putting into this to backfire, to be honest.
Right.
That's really, really where my heart is coming from. Is we've been putting in a lot of hard work, and I'm really, really excited as far as, and because I feel like we're almost there to like getting this, you know.
May I respond?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure that I was communicating that I don't want to create a back door for this to be undone.
So you're making a comment on Mayor's version of the mission. Right. Is that what you're saying? With the groups,
yes.
Clarify with the
just that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So my viewpoint is more of the freedom of speech perspective, and if I wanted to make an example of an extreme case like the Ku Klux Klan, let them come and talk. Let them identify who they are. So everybody in the community knows exactly who they are. I think it's a very positive thing. I don't think making them go underground serves anybody. If they're going to come out and show their beliefs, then we know who they are. I think it's better than having something shielded. I think that example is a great example for including that verbiage.
I understand like where this comes from. Actually, I was pleasantly surprised that it was a whole lot broader, you know, and I was like, oh, I didn't expect that.
That's the rub, right?
What?
That's the rub. It's the expectation. You guys expect me to say or do something.
No. Come on. You and I have had conversations upon hours. You don't.
Well,
don't miss my words. Don't do that. I'm not John.
All right.
Okay. I'm sitting here. What I'm saying is I don't want the good work of this to that there be a loophole or a backdoor to blow this up. That's all I'm saying, right? Like I understand
the blow up piece. I mean, having the Ku Klux Klan.
That's not
a backdoor. I mean, it is an extreme case. I get that.
I don't want some other group with anybody with a subversive, right, thing to undo the work that we're doing to make this to tear this apart rather than this being something that is bringing everybody together. All right, creating good. I'm not saying this is worded wrong. I'm just bringing up some also food for thought, like, yeah. Making sure as we're continuing to hammer through this.
Okay? I'll have to spend some time thinking about that because, you know, I obviously have a different perspective. And if somebody were to present similar to that, I don't see a back door. And if you see one, let me know specifically. Olga?
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying, Brandon. And that's, so I do see this, I want a third version. Okay, I'm not, I want like something in the middle. I want it to be ironclad that people are not going to be excluded, or like a new system of discrimination. We're fighting an old system of discrimination that's evil, clearly, and is a problem, but by creating a new system of discrimination based on, you know, privilege right. points or whatever. So I don't want that. So it might not pass. We might end up going with the original bylaws, whatever, but at least I want to make a case here for another viable solution, a viable group that is not, does not involve the Ku Klux Klan. I mean, God forbid. Okay, please. Okay, that's off the table for me. But something that is, okay, when I was in that group, the talking group, they asked me what is diversity to me? And I remembered going as a new immigrant who at one point didn't speak English, I remember going to the Festival of Nations in St. Paul or wherever it was here. And my mind was completely blown away by the color and the diversity. And I've never seen anything like that in my life. It was a shock to my system in a really good way. And I was amazed at the difference. So I want that to me is diversity. That was equality because these people were just presenting the best of their culture and everybody was really rejoicing in that and having a great fun time learning about different cultures and communicating the best they could. So I that's my vision, I guess, when I think of diversity and equality. So I want, you know, the idea of a multicultural multicultural commission advising the council on the different cultures in Crystal, because we have such a diverse community. We have people from different continents and countries and different languages. So why not have a commission that really helps us build that communication, build trust, really share with one another, and that there is representation and everybody has an equal voice without judgment. So that's my hope as I've been looking at all of these options, and I really want something that reflects that to be put into practice. And again, I do have concerns about the diversity, equity, and inclusion framework as it has been practiced in the past in virtually every single setting where it has been practiced. It is not something that as a council member, as an elected official, I feel comfortable with, because I just don't see how that I can fulfill my duty as a council member to represent people. So somewhere in between these two for me, I think would be a good option to have on the table.
I don't think because there's more words that it's more extreme.
Right.
I think that everything put in here has its own merit. And to just do something to minimize that, all of a sudden we're compromising again. I'm not interested in compromising again. If something needs to be added, I'd be interested in that. It's one of those things where it needs to be rooted out in everything. So go ahead, John.
We talked about a diversity, equity, and inclusion commission. So could we add diversity to the ordinance, you know, title? And then also, I've been looking through this, and it's pretty much, you know, talks about equity and inclusion. Should we? I saw a couple of places where the word diverse was used, and should we add diversity as part of that, you know, statement when the other two items are mentioned? And then lastly, I have a question about social media. Do we monitor commission members' social media? Do we do that as a city? Do we monitor their media posts? So,
I can't imagine.
Yeah, so I don't know if you really need to have to worry about, arbitrary standards or something like that for social media.
Well, it's not about monitoring it. It's about excluding them from something because of something on there. Their social media. It's not that we have to be government that has to make sure that the right words are said in everybody's social media. That's ridiculous. That's exactly what we're trying to get against. You know, we're not trying to be fascistic in nature. But oftentimes you'll see those types of discrimination cases going on. I mean, people losing their jobs based on what they did on Facebook.
True. I mean, there's, you know, companies, you know, if you work in the private sector, they monitor your social media posts. I mean, it's hard to believe. I mean, but they do it. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because certainly they don't want to have, you know that type of negative impact.
Brennan?
Whatever.
All right. So I had, just because I don't have my glasses on tonight and I had to like reread and do some underlining and stuff like that. And so I had to clarify it for myself, but I mean, and what you're saying in this is what I got out of it, is basically, it is helping fight discrimination, civil rights violations by government, business, banks, or other institutions doing business in the city. Basically, if any of these are causing adverse treatment, they're discriminating against or advocate for or cause adverse treatment of any citizen based on blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
Right. Okay. And that blah, 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 blah was the all of these the so all of these other points after that's key, that causing advocate for or cause adverse treatment of any citizen, right, based off of, you know, any of these other things.
You got it.
Okay.
Yeah, good point. I mean, great clarification. Thanks for highlighting it.
I said it was a lot. You had a lot in there. Oh, yeah. And I've read it like several times. I was like, wait, what? All right. Sorry.
So should we try to do a rewrite? I think we can merge your idea and my idea into one. That would be one. Go ahead.
I say we just go with mostly what the city staff prepared here. I would change maybe the regular meeting times, maybe not the fourth week. But that would be pretty easy. And then maybe the sunset clause, and then we talked about that. I don't know if we figured that out or not. And maybe what John said, add diversity to certain parts of it. That seems a good spot to add to it. That would be my thought.
I agree with David. I don't like the title Welcoming Community Commission.
Change the title then. I like the Mac.
You like the Mac?
I'm already a Mac though.
Yeah. I know.
I've gone to the Mac meeting.
I was a member before.
Has anybody else gone to the Mac before? Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. I think that's a really, to me, I mean, the whole point of it is just advising the police. I think that's a brilliant idea, whoever came up with that. So I think we could really
Stephanie
make it work.
Come up with that?
It's Hennepin County.
No, I was giving you credit.
I think I came up with
CMAC for Mayor Adams with Crystal Mac for Council Mac.
Council Mac.
Council Mac. C-Mac. Okay. Yep. So.
Hi.
So I'm just gonna say this just because I'm back there twitching when you're talking about Mac, and you guys obviously make the decision on what you want to call it. I just want to caution you that if you decide to call it the same thing as the police Mac, then we're really going to have to make sure that we say it's a police. Ours is a police Mac.
You're going to sue us, right?
No, it was not us. It was Hennepin County that came up with this. And so police Mac, right. City Mac, right? So just
council Mac.
And that's all I'm, you know, is making sure that it's divided.
Yeah, I think.
I think she's raising a really good point, and for that reason alone, we should come up with another title or another name for it.
Well, so that you don't have to say that. Well, yeah, the Welcoming Commission is basically a, you know, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Commission. So, you know, I mean, don't create confusion on what it is. I mean, try to leave it as it is and let it go from there. Who knows? Maybe appoint it, you know, once you get to the commission in place, it'll go like, yeah, we want to have a new name for it. We want to call it this. Great. Wonderful. You know, who knows, right? We're just going to just basically give it a push and get it started.
Good point, John. I think of Welcome Wagon, and I look at this as a bigger issue than people moving into our city. You could be selling your house and realize you have a covenant that you're not supposed to sell to Jewish people. And there are parts of Crystal that do have that. What's that called? The covenants?
We did get rid of those. We worked. Right, Anne, could you speak to
there
that?
There is a way just to get rid of them.
Okay.
We're talking about just
correct. I don't like welcoming community
that's
commission
fine.
And I agree with Stephan or Chief Revering that we don't want confusion.
Well, I don't think that's what she said. She said you just got to be very clear. I mean, don't put words in her mouth. She said you better be very clear if you're going to do it that there's a PMAC or a CMAC, you know, those types of things.
Right. But I think
so I don't agree with that statement. So
I want to clarify that my heartburn with this is not necessarily just the names, although words matter and words have meaning, and behind words are ideas that come to fruition in the real world. Absolutely. And affect real people. So that's why naming is important, yes, although the name itself is not important as much as the terminology within it, that is where it hinges on. And my heartburn is that the framework of diversity, equity, and inclusion within itself, it allows for ideas to exist that should not exist. For example, same ideas that the Ku Klux Klan espouses, that an American not born in America is not really an American. So in order for you, if you're not born in America, you're not an American. That is one of the premises of that heinous group of evil. Okay, so within the diversity, equity, and inclusion, unfortunately, as good-hearted right. as those ideas are, within that framework, ideas are allowed to exist that are evil in nature, and that bothers me. So those ideas are spoken, and those ideas are written down as well in this report, and they concern me. And so I'm expressing my concern, especially as a council member who's supposed to represent everyone. Right. The residents in my in you know their voices are equal to me. So it's the framework behind this. I think should be another solution. There should be another approach to make this work so that everybody is indeed included and valued equally. And the name itself, the words matter again, but that is not as crucial as the framework on which it's built.
So Mayor, you had a question that are we ready to move forward with a decision here? Yes. Is that your question?
No, not that wasn't my question exactly. I think there's considerable interest in having a rewrite, at least.
Should we vote on it?
No. No, we don't vote necessarily for work sessions.
I don't think we need to rewrite. I think we, you know.
Okay. I do. And, you know, we have differing opinions, and we're not going to just haphazardly go through this. So
what I was going to suggest is if the council would like, Troy and I can try to take a run at an alternative based on the council's conversation tonight to bring back to you at a future work session. Means Troy will do most of work.
Yeah, and again,
I've been taking notes.
And again, if we do that, we want to see it early enough.
Yep.
Because there are just, I mean, to Olga's point, there are some things that we can't leave space for, you know, for it to come in creeping and allow that type of discrimination. Sure. So.
Just to clarify, so we'd have two different ones.
Thinking. I don't think you want to get more than that. I think then it's going to get too.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. Mm-hmm.
Good with that? 1, 2, 3. No one opposed? Okay.
I'm ready to pull the trigger on it right now. What the heck, you know?
I agree.
Yeah.
We've been talking about this for a long
time. Yeah, long time.
Well, you know, let's get it right.
Well, right, we have it right. We picked the
game. You don't have an agreement that we have it right.
Come on,
we don't. All right.
Come on. Olga, you've been opposed to this whole thing. Now you have to get on board. Come on.
Let's move on to constituent updates.
Okay. Good news. 43rd in Colorado, making progress and reinspection next week. So hopefully it'll be taken care of next week.
Which one is that one?
That's the one that had wood in the backyard, fires and all that.
Oh, right there. Oh, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then
the one where we were all
getting that's right. The one. So good news. Stay tuned, but hopefully we'll have good news for you by the April 5th meeting. And then on Florida. 33rd and Florida, we have scheduled abatement for April 11th.
Mm. Okay.
So community development and Troy's office deserve huge kudos for getting us to that point.
This one's been on the table
for a while. That's not
for 100 years.
since last summer.
Yeah, it's been longer than that. It's been a long time.
Started the court process in July.
I don't have my hearing aid in.
We're going to repeat that for those listening.
So thank you, Mayor. The court process, we started in July of last year, and we just got the court order within the last 2 weeks. So that's how long this kind of thing takes. Wow. But we have the court order now. The court gave the property owner 30 more days to clean it up. We presume he will not. And that means on April 11th, we have a contractor coming in to remove the junk from the yard. So,
nice.
Thank you, John.
Hey, joke, but I actually get my hearing aids back in the morning.
Can I ask one question on that?
Okay.
Yeah. So the cost of the cleanup, does that end up becoming a tax lien, or what happens? I mean,
that's a great question. What will happen is, like with any abatement, we will first invoice the property owner for not just the cleanup costs, but in this case, because we had to go through this court process, all of our legal costs. We'll send an invoice. They'll have 30 days to pay it. If they don't pay it, then it becomes a pending special assessment, and then it'll be part of your October special assessment hearing along with all the other unpaid charges, just like the utility bill.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
City manager check-in.
I think it's there. I'm not sure there's much to say. You're that exciting.
All right. New business?
What was it?
Here it's 8:59.
Your work-life balance?
Yeah, I took vacation time.
You did take vacation time.
Nice.
And then you jumped in.
Once every 10 years, for God's sake.
I told you
we're done.
Yay.